all got dreams, we all want things. But what you gonna do for it? How you gonna move for it? What you gonna be? And do you believe you can do anything? But what you gonna do for it? How you gonna move for it? What you gonna be?
We pay our respects to the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Thank you for your Mother Earth, the place where we learn, play and grow. We promise to do our very best to protect our Mother Earth. We understand if we look after the country, then the country will look after us. Woo!
Raymond, thank you very much for coming.
Welcome.
I can't wait to talk to you. I love talking to the more experienced guys who've got a lot of history and who've been around the block, we can say, in a polite way. And find out more about your history and what you've done and some advice that people can maybe take. But I always start off with, what is your very first food memory?
Very first food memory? It's a hard one, but it always goes back to the Nono's house for a special, Easter and all that sort of stuff is how they brought all the flavours together. And we would never eat that food again till another, like Easter or Christmas, but it was always sort of like a degustation. So basically it was always the spaghetti with the tomato sauce, that smell, and then eating the dish is just always in the memory bank.
So obviously you've got a Scottish accent, mm-hmm. but then you're saying spaghetti, meatballs, yeah. nonna, and these kind of things. Yeah. So I'm guessing that you've got Italian heritage.
Yeah, my father is a second generation Italian, and mother was Scottish, so they sort of hooked up when they were young, and then that's where I get my... But I'm more Scottish than Italian, But we were always sort of brought up to always sort of be like everybody else. They didn't want us to speak Italian, they didn't want us to... tell anybody that we're Italian, but the name is there. So, I mean, how do you work that one out,
Yeah, for sure. And that Italian food, was that was quite prominent in your dinners and all that kind of thing, or not really?
Not really, because my mum used to, cook the Scottish stuff. It's only till these special events. I mean, always when we went to my Nono's and Nana's, then we got the Italian stuff on the Italian side, as the Scottish used to say, you used to get the hard rolls to eat, with the salami
and dry roll,
It's like, Dean and DeLuca up in Edinburgh, now it's, everybody wants to go to Dean and DeLuca to have lunch. Yeah. Before, in my age, when I was young, people used to say, what's that behind behind the boards here? He goes, oh, that's that Italian crap. You don't want to eat that. It's hard rolls, smelly ham, smelly cheese. At that time, but now it's hip,
For sure.
And it's the same with the Italians here when they used to take their antipasto to school.
Yeah.
It's that same thing,
Definitely. And what were you like as a kid?
I was a very quiet kid.
Were you?
I tried to keep myself to myself. It wasn't until, that was early stages, and then when you went to school, then it became a problem, the Catholic Protestant, the Italian name, had a dark skin then. It became a lot of very racist time.
Did it really?
Without a doubt. It was very hard at school, you're getting picked on because of your name, getting picked on because of your father was a Catholic.
Like in Ireland, that Catholic
In Ireland, yeah. It was
rife. Like that in Scotland?
It was rife in Scotland, without a doubt.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was very, very much in Scotland. And it was a hard life, so you had to...
Celtic Rangers, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, Celtic Rangers, Hearts and Hibs.
Hearts and, yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? And it was pretty intense, My father, a lot of people, one time walking along the road, there was this guy who came along and just spat on me and kicked me right in the shin with these big cowboy boots on. And I always remember that day. And I was about 9 years old, but I had it in my back of my head.
And how old was he?
He was about 30.
Oh, like a proper bloke.
Yeah, that time. But as time got on, I got a bit more streetwise.
Of course.
He's got his upcomings in the end, So that was the kind of...
You remembered him?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. It was either fight... Or just die like everybody else, what I mean? And that's what brought us up in streetwise,
Nice. And what about school? Like, you say you were quiet and that, but did you enjoy subjects? Were you more of like a digging holes in the garden, climbing trees, or were you more of an artist?
More artist. I was more into geography, history, reading a lot of stuff, read a lot of books. It was more my thing, you know. Maths and that, very stupid at maths, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it was, you had to do a little bit to get on, you know, but school wasn't for me. It was, never was for me, but geography and history always got massive, you know, 80 out of 100 or 85 out of 100, because that's what I loved. I loved hearing stories. I loved how things were made, how things were done. And I was very, very creative on outside as well, you know. I was always sort of business-minded.
Well, yeah.
Setting up little fairs, getting something and making people pay me for pulling them around on one of these pallet things with wheels, you know.
We used to call them bogies.
A bogie, whatever it was. And just spin them around for 1 minute and they'd pay me 50 pence, you know what I mean? And just setting up little fairs where they chuck money into the little basin and see if they could land on the target. So it was always thinking how to make money, you know?
I was exactly the same.
Yeah.
Swear to God, exactly. It's funny, exactly. I used to buy plain T-shirts. And I don't know if you remember them pens that like foam off. They were called like foam pens.
Yeah.
And you could draw on things.
All right, yeah.
But I used to get other people, because I couldn't draw. I'd get other people to draw on them. Yeah. And I'd sell them. We used to make perfume. We called it perfume.
Right.
We'd get rose petals.
Yeah,
rose petals, water, mix them together
and try and sell it.
You know, like carol singing, just get a crew of people carol singing, very much a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, and
you had a family business, all right?
Yeah, we had fish and chip shop. We were very famous for fish and chip shops, you know, the Capaldis, you know.
Multiple, or just one?
Oh, there was three.
Three.
So we had, and my mum had to, we had to give it up when she had got some breast cancer, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
So we got rid of them, but yeah, they were very famous, you know. But there's a lot of Capaldi's fish and chip shops still in Glasgow and all that sort of stuff, that side of the family, you know.
It's your family? So have you seen a Capaldi's chip shop?
That side of the family, yeah.
And is that the Scottish side or the Italian side?
Well, they're Italian, Scottish second generation Italian,
okay.
You know.
There's
quite not a big bit of Capaldi's there, but they sort of all come from Casino, like Lewis Capaldi, the singer, and then they're all sort of, they're in Glasgow. And we're in Edinburgh. We're the Edinburgh Capaldis, you know what I mean?
Okay. So there was always that entrepreneurial thing in the family, is that...
Yeah, look, I think my dad was never entrepreneurial. My mum was more.
Was she?
Sorry, you know what I mean? My dad was an engineer for British Rail. He worked very hard for British Rail, and he worked very hard through his days. And that entrepreneurial was always, I think it was always coming from me and pushing him, you know?
I made
sure that it was sort of doing more than just fish and chips and trying to get them on to doing other stuff, which other stuff sometimes, it was always learning curves when you did other stuff, and it was always that same thing, maybe just stick to what you know you know, and try and master that before you master anything else.
Yeah. Do you go back? Do you use any of them, that knowledge from then? And do you ever reflect on them days when you were in business now? Do you reflect back and think, oh, like I remember that, or take some knowledge from them days when you were a kid? Or, you know, you've been quite young at them days.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So
you'll
have been picking these little things up. Do you ever reflect on them days ever to this day?
You've got to. I mean, that's what gives you that gut feel.
Yeah.
See, that gut feel is very important in business. You can go to school and learn and go to university and learn all this stuff that's in books. You need to throw away the books. Yeah, you can read the books in your time, but you need to throw away the books and actually get on the tools and actually understand what actually happens, because every business is different and every beast has to be tamed different. Mm. So you really got to make sure, and you really got to master what you need and build up a bank of knowledge rather than reading all about it, but not knowing how to fix that bank of knowledge. You know,
it's
getting your hands dirty. If you don't get your hands dirty, you'll never know the knowledge. Look, there's people who can run businesses. They're probably lucky that they've got that money stream coming through and they can make decisions. But if they actually went on the floor, all the cuts that they make, they could actually learn a lot from being on the floor. And that's why I always spend 10 minutes of the day, if I'm up in the office, I'll be down there 10 to 15 minutes a day, every hour, to make sure I'm watching what's going on the floor.
Yeah.
And make sure it's communicating with the staff, make sure you're just watching what they're doing and making sure that everything is going to the plan.
To the way it's meant to be going, for sure. But it's funny that when you're saying that bank of knowledge, I'll be doing something and little bits will just drop into my head, like, mm-hmm. and I'll be reflecting on like 1997. Think something that someone said that I forgot the conversation, yeah. and it'll just drop in and be like, yeah. "Oh, I remember that," and like, yeah. "Maybe we need to implement that." Or do you know?
Understand. One thing for me is, you know, when all this foraging started, I used to go with my nono to forage for mushrooms.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I learned from my nono, and I think these things are in life to tell you that at certain points of your life, it's got to come back to you, and it's actually telling you a story. You know, it's like story about picking mushrooms. You know, he made sure that I understood everything about picking mushrooms. When you go to pick mushrooms, you don't cut it with the root; you cut it across, so you still leave the root in. Then you get a wicker basket to put the mushrooms in. So when you're walking about the forest floor, the seeds are all spread in, and plus you go to the ant hill to put shake it about on the ant hill so the ants will actually take it down and it'll grow again, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's lots of things in your life that you sometimes these bits of memories don't come really, you don't really take them to heart, but it's always important to try and jump on the memories, and then it could be in at one time in life, it's got to come back
definitely.
In that circle.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You know what I mean?
It's
got to come back in that circle.
Absolutely. I don't know if I've said this before on the podcast, but I remember I was working in Jersey and I was having a beer with a Scottish lad, actually. Yeah. And that was famous question, like, oh, where did you work? He was a chef. I was, you know, where did you work? What have you done? And he was saying, I worked in a terrine factory. And then we were, like, just having a beer. And I was like, obviously, I had new terrines and I was working with them a little bit back in them days, but nothing really. And then that just dropped into my head and like just sat there and I never thought about it again. Then when we're thinking about this, a few other things come into play, a few people said a few things, and it all come together and that's how this created by one conversation, having a beer. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you just never
know where these little snippets will come together in 15, 20 years' time.
I do believe that there is, you've got your own circle in life. You've got your people who's got to be in that circle. And it's no matter what, they're there, you know, and everybody's on the outer. There's inner, there's outer, and there's really outer.
Yeah.
But they're all in your circle, and it's all, you're all on the same path, but there's different ways some people will do it, you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, the Terry Laybourne that you worked with, I've got that book, I read it the other night again. I've had that book for ages, you know, a couple of people from who worked with Terry Laybourne.
Yeah.
And then there's you that worked with Terry Laybourne.
There's always that,
you know, that 6 degrees of separation is a real thing in it. And that's what makes you as a person, and you've got to read what is going around in your radar, your zone, that radar zone, you know, what's going on, what's happening, what can be in that step. And the answer's always in that 6 degrees of separation, I think, you know.
And I think, like you say, relationships, it just goes to show relationships. Like you say, I worked for Terry, did it, and like we worked with different people who worked together, and you don't know where them relationships are going to come back round.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, so if you've got to be like a man of your word, you've got to be trustworthy, all these kind of things. Because you never know when you're going to bump into someone who's worked with someone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very, very important. It's like, it's very important, you know, because their relationships do stick, you know, and it's all about honesty and trust and being trustworthy and not trying to be a snake and go behind people's back and all that stuff. Look, I've probably, in my time, been one of the most hardest taskmasters, but the people that's taken that properly have done really well. The other people that's not taking it properly, and to be honest with you, some of it was a bit out of hand, you know, and that sort of thing, but it is what it was. It was learning how to be a leader and how to be a manager, and it wasn't the right way to do it. So I learned that way. That's not the right way to manage people, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it was also different back in the day.
Yeah, it was different. Well, I was discussing that with someone the other day about now and then, you know, and I don't want to say, oh, they were the days, and you know, there was great chefs there that I've seen fall by the wayside because that's all the laminated on about. Oh, they were the days and all that sort of stuff. Well, you know, you've got to these are the days, because we're running businesses now, we're running, it's a new way of life, so we got to fit in, you know. It's not when you come from London and you come here and you call everything, oh, this stuff's rubbish, this stuff's not good, oh, it's not like London. Oh, you got to change.
Yeah, I come with that attitude.
Yeah, we all did. But you have to cut it and let it go.
Yeah.
And just work to what you can do in this country. If you want to be here, this is how you have to do it. And yeah, you have to drop your standards probably dramatically, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But not to a point where it's really bad and you've done all these trainings, but there is a point that you've got to say, you know what, we just got to fit in here. We've got to think about me, being happy, and that's the main thing.
Yeah. It is. It's interesting to say we all did, like...
Everybody did.
A bit arrogant.
Yeah.
Definitely a bit arrogant. Did. You think you're coming here and, you know, we've come from, you know, working at fine dining in England or wherever, maybe, that you've got all the answers and everything. And then you're like... It's a humbling experience.
It is.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, without a doubt. And you can see that, you know, when I came here, I was aggressive. You were nasty, really nasty and aggressive, and you didn't take no for an answer, which is good in a way.
Yeah.
But that's not how Australia was, you know what I mean? You used to see the GMs go away at 5 o'clock on a Friday night for a drink, and everybody, or the manager disappeared. And you used to go, well, where's everybody on the weekend? Oh, they take the weekend off. You go, what? Weekend off? Well, this is, you know, you've got to work the weekend. This is our busiest time, you know?
Yeah.
But that's how it did. And is it wrong? No, it's not. Mm. Is there a way we do wrong? Maybe you need to question it, you know?
Yeah.
Is it wrong, you know? So that's the...
It is. It's very... Like you say, I always grapple with this in my mind. Like, if you went down there... Like we're in the factory at the moment. If I went down there and like acted the way that I used to act, like, you know, cracking the whip, come on, what's going on? Why is this? What the fuck is? Why is this container here? Why is it? Why is there no centre feed in the fucking thing? Who took the fucking last set? Do you know, just being like all that, you know what I mean? Like all that, right? Who are you talking to? Do you did all that just bullshit? Basically, you would probably get within the day. You'd get more work, like they'd be rushing around, they'd be flying, because they'd be scared or whatever it might be. Which in short term, in that day, you're producing more, potentially.
Yeah.
But in the long term, when people are leaving left, right and centre and you're trying to recruit staff and you don't have consistency, like, and then they're making mistakes because they're nervous, they're scared to do anything. I remember being scared to... like put stuff on the pass, like nervous to put stuff on the pass.
Because
like
you get fun back at you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was like, you're like, fucking. So much so, like, there was one night I was working next to, you know, anywhere, and I was on the garnish, he was on the meat, and we were doing sorted potatoes with a beef fillet, and when the beef fillet come on, you meant to slice the potato, start sorting the beef, and I just could not remember. I was so scared, I couldn't remember. Like, I must have missed 9 out of 10. And he'd be like, where's the sorted potato? I was like, fuck. Just because I was so, the anxiety of working next to that person was so intense, I just couldn't remember anything, right? So the point I'm making is, now we're in manufacturing, I believe, like, calm, nice, relaxed. You might get, like, 20% less out the day, but they never make way less mistakes.
Because
we're doing a lot of weighing out.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be very precise. And then the staff retention is phenomenal because everyone's calm and everyone thinks it's a calm environment. So in the short term, you might lose a little bit on every day, but within the year, you gain absolutely heaps. Does that make sense?
Well, it is, because the situation is to hold the whole thing about manufacturing. You can have the worst product in the world. If you're consistent, you'll do all right.
Yeah.
But if you're inconsistent, you'll not do good. And it's the same with the best product in the world. You can have the best product in the world, but if you're very inconsistent, you're not going to last.
Yeah.
But if you're consistent, you're going to last.
Yeah.
And that's by keeping the standard of the staff and making sure the staff are good and looking after the staff. It's number one, you know?
It is
number one, and the culture is number one. But, you know, there's a lot going on at the minute that sort of... contradicts that. It's all about the staff, and I'm fine with that, because I want a happy life as well. I'm at an age that I need a happy life. You know what I mean? I don't want to face that every day, going in there and changing staff and all that sort of stuff. But sometimes you need to do that big clean out and get rid of what to reset again, you know. But there is that thing. The staff are very important, only if they think they want to be there. You know what I mean?
And
that's who you put all your
they need to buy
energy
into it,
on.
Right?
Yeah, they need to buy into it. They need to buy into what you want as well. It's not all about just giving.
Of course.
You know, and we've all done that and made a mistake out of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's turned around and bit us, you know?
How many times have you brought someone on and thought these are the saviour? And they're not. Have you done that?
Probably 10 out of 10.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, and these are guys you've worked with before. Yeah. You know, you think that's actually, no, these guys, I've seen, they've worked for me. But again, the guys that you've brought in before, is they've worked under a regime.
Yeah.
You know, and they're thinking they're going to come back and work under that regime.
Yeah.
But things have changed and you've got to change. You know, you've got to change it because it's not healthy for everybody, anyone.
Yeah.
Even more yourself and the business, you know.
Yeah.
So you've got to, that regime, you know, I've had people come in and goes, oh, mate, they're lazy, I can't work with them. How do you put up with this? And then you get them telling you how to run your business, you know.
Yeah,
and then you go,
no,
just hold on here, you know. I mean, this is different, you know. And that's what you face as well. And then you start questioning yourself, oh, am I doing the right thing here,
definitely.
You know.
And there's a lot of questioning yourself, Raymond. There's a lot of questioning.
Oh, in business, you question yourself
every
day. Oh,
my goodness.
You know what I mean?
And sometimes the small questions and sometimes the massive questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I doing this right?
You know?
And because you stick to a strategy, because ultimately you pick a strategy and you go for that strategy. So maybe it's marketing, maybe it's sales, maybe it's culture, whatever that strategy is. And you've got to stick to that for a period of time.
Yeah.
Because you've got to see if it works.
Yeah.
So you're talking a year, 2 years. And you question, is this the right way? When you're not getting the results or whatever it might be. And you've just got to have faith in yourself and get everyone else to buy into it. And then potentially you might go, that was wrong. I've got to change. I've got to do it this way. And that is, fuck, it's full on.
Yeah. Well, it's full on. And this is probably more a more honest chat than, you know, you can go into the internet now, you can see the Facebook, you've got your Andy Robbins, you've got all these gurus that are telling you how to do it. But you've got to remember, that's their business. That's their business to tell you how easy it is
and
how easy you can get it. But it's not easy.
It's really difficult.
Until you're in the trenches, you know, and all these big tanks are coming to you and you've got to make a decision. What decision? What? Are they just thinking, oh, no, you just got to stay there and just keep calm and then just when they go over you, you know, act then, you know? That's what's like running a business. You've got all these 100 questions, 10,000 questions in your head at the time. The tanks are coming to work. What do I do? And how do I save my crew, you know?
Yeah.
This is every day in business.
For sure.
And if anybody tells me different, tell me what business you run, because I would love to see it. You know what I mean?
Have you got any jobs?
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Tell me a job description. Yeah. Tell me this. Tell me that. Show me how you know. And you've got all these people in human remains. Human resources that do not understand the day-to-day business or want to understand because they're reading from a thing that's been signed by someone who is in another ivory tower that's trying to tell you how that should work out and how it should pan out.
Yeah.
So,
but I've never actually been around humans with brains and you know what I mean? Who react in different ways, whose kids are sick, who's going through a divorce, who's...
Yeah.
You know, whatever it might be,
exactly.
Felt hit off the motorbike.
Yeah.
There's so many moving parts.
Yeah.
It's bananas.
Or someone's, you know, you're walking the tightrope and someone's on the other end with a lighter and just burning it slowly as you walk across.
Yeah.
And you've got to make that decision. How do I get it over the side before this goes, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it every day. That's walking the tightrope. Anybody that tells you different are absolutely clowns, idiots, and basically not in business.
Because
it's easy for all these business people, and I look at, you know, I take it from my auntie. She was a unionist, you know.
Your auntie?
My auntie, she was a massive unionist, mate. Yeah. And she was always off with a sore back because she worked to it that nobody could ever, the doctors could never find that pain in the back, you know what I mean? And the back is the worst place to ever find out what is really wrong.
Yeah.
And she worked that out, you know what I mean? But she was in the union, and I take that. I take that to the situation the exact same as some of these business gurus that try and tell you how to run your business. They're the same people that can't actually do it, but they can talk about it and they can tell you from a sheet and they can put in little bits of sale bites in there just to tell you that I know what you're doing. But when you put them on the floor, they're absolutely useless.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. I totally agree. And like this passive income. Yeah. These guys have got passive. Oh, and you can you can buy 10 houses without putting in a deposit. And you can, like, what the, like, where did this happen?
Yeah,
where
exactly.
is this? Like,
if it was that easy, we'd all be doing it. Yeah.
I'm searching everywhere for these, like,
exactly.
All I know is fucking serious hard work, relationships,
consistency.
And having a fucking crack. That's all I know.
That's all I know. And that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do. And people don't realise what you have to do. Goes, oh, I wish I had a business like yours. Well, if you want to work 24 hours sometimes, or if you want to work at the weekend and do this while I get the kids. I mean, you got kids. I've not kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine. I can. I mean, that alone.
Yeah.
You know, I was just up the coast there, and with a friend. Is, you know, and basically he turned around to me and says, man, what I've worked out raising kids, you've got to treat it like a business. You know? He says, whatever takes up my time, so I buy them a bus to get to school. And I employ someone to drive that bus to get them to school.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. So that's another business you're running day to day. You know?
See,
you,
like this,
you and Rebecca, you know?
Mate, honestly. So on the morning, like, it's military at my house. So like, 8 o'clock. So I get a shower. Like, if I'm doing drop-offs, so if the way that me and Beck work it is... Obviously, we work 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Three of them days, one of us will start at 6.
Mm-hmm.
The other two, someone will take money to school, and then we swap it. So, like, so one of us always starts at 6, we'll always take him. Normally, the one who does the 6 o'clock start has to pick Monty up and make it fair, so you can get a full day.
Yeah.
And when I'm at 8 o'clock, it's like, I get out the shower, 10 to 8, Monty, you've got to get dressed. So he's got 10 to 8 to 8 to get dressed. We come out, then it's like, breakfast. What do you want for breakfast? He gets his breakfast at, like, 5 past 8. And then it's like countdown. It's 10 past 8, Monty, where you up to your breakfast? It's 4 past 8, we're leaving in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's just like, just talk him through it and then out the door. And then, like, you know, it's just military. It's great.
Is,
yeah,
exactly. And not, you know, trying to bring up a family and a business, I take my hat off to people, you know what I mean? Because I just do not know how they do it. You know what I mean?
It's like single mothers. Just, I don't know, single parents.
Single mothers.
Not single parents.
Exactly.
How do they do that?
Or people that live in here, live in Melbourne, who's not got any parents here. Like, that's just a massive thing,
yeah,
you know?
And they're
business people to me, you know?
And they can
run a business.
Like them,
you know what I mean?
Single parents who can... Yeah, Beck always says, like, if you can employ, like, a lady, it's generally a lady, you know, who has kids, single parent, when she's here from, like, 9 till 2:30 before she goes, she will just be so productive.
Yeah,
because they're at home cooking dinner, doing the laundry,
sorting out things,
homework.
Amazing. Because when I go home at night, I'm gone.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm just eating and I'm gone, you know?
Single parents, I honestly, genuinely...
And that's what actually motivates me, is I'm thinking, if I was a single... mother, father, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I've got to stand up and I go on the treadmill and I watch the TV on the treadmill instead of sitting on the seat watching the TV or the news, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll have something to eat and then I feel that I've done my time, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the stuff. If I ever feel I've got excuses, I look at that single parent. That's what puts me in mind. Yeah, I do, because there's no excuse.
Yeah.
There's no excuse.
And I don't even know how they get through, like,
I don't know.
Like, mentally, like, you've got no one to sort of bounce stuff off. Like, you know what I mean? Like, You kind of, when you're in a partner, you can take turns, you know, like, you might slide away and read a book. Or, you know, you get 5 minutes on your own. Because, you know, for me, Beck will answer the questions, do whatever he's got to do. And I can just take 10 minutes here or 15 minutes there and then vice versa. But when it's just you.
Yeah.
Every question.
Yeah.
Every swimming thing. For instance, we do every other Monty does swimming on a Monday. Every other Monday we take turns. Beck takes 1 week. I take another day, like that. But it's always you. It's always you putting him to bed. It's always you bathing him. It's always you getting him ready.
Yeah.
It's always you. Like, fuck, that's
it is. It's full
hats
on.
Off. It's full on.
It's
mate.
Full on.
And then people also, you've got to remember, going back to the culture and that, they might be working with for you, and the job could be a little bit of the work their asses off or whatever it might be, but it might be like their safe space as well, where they just get, like, they come to work and it's 6 hours where they can be around adults.
And they've all got one thing to do.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
exactly.
I mean? It's not like 10,000 things.
And the last thing they
know?
Need is you fucking chewing them.
Yeah, exactly.
For, like,
exactly.
You've got to work faster, you've got to work harder.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I always bear that in mind as well. Like, you don't know what people's relationships, they might be, like, going through the problems in the marriage, or they might be their kid might be have cancer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So and then they want you fucking banging on at them. Like if they're doing a good job, they need a pat on the back, and if they're not doing, you just need to explain to them and say, look, we just probably need a little bit more out of you. Is anything good?
Well, that's understanding again, that's understanding the machine. You know, the machine won't work if there's some little parts not working. So you've got to make sure that you're on. I think in life I'm a very good. I can look at someone and I know there's something going down. You know what I mean? Or I know there's something wrong.
EQ, right? There's not,
you know. Yeah, you really. I'm very good at picking that person. I'm very good at picking that kind of attitude if something is
body
wrong,
and
I make sure we tune into that very heavily on the floor and pull them aside if anything's going wrong. You know what I mean?
Do you feel like that's a big part of your job?
It's a massive part of the job, you know what I mean? And it's some part of the job I love, and some part of the job, it's not that you love it when it starts to become, you know, really serious stuff that you got to sit them down and think about, you know?
Yeah,
and you know, to be honest with you, anybody that likes sacking people has got to be a monster.
Because
it doesn't matter if this guy's gave you so much hassle or so much trouble. It's still part of the family, you know what I mean?
And
you're losing
that
part of the family because you try everything to keep them and put them on that straight and narrow.
Yeah.
And it's never great sacking people. That's something I can never get used to.
Yeah, we let someone go a few years ago. And we were, the thing is as well, a lot of people are probably in the same position as this in business is you're learning to be in business whilst being in business.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's my fucking first business. Yeah, yeah. All right, we're 8 years in. But there's the firsts of many.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's like the first time we let someone go, like when I reflect back on that, like, did we give them the enough opportunities? Did we give them the right feedback?
Yeah.
Was our expectations, did we think that they were the saviour?
And
we've got this person in. Oh, now we've got this person in, they're the saviour. And like, didn't give them the right guidelines. Did we give them enough information? Did we give them the right feedback? And then they weren't the saviour and we got rid of them. And that's someone's life. That's someone's confidence. That's someone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you've got to look again, looking back at yourself, reflecting yourself. Like, I'm fucking up with someone's feelings and someone's emotions and someone's livelihood and someone's life. And did I do the right job there?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But like, I always put it into the words that, and even to the words that even now, you know, I say, look, at the end of the day, I have to answer to Wonder Pies.
Yeah,
that's who I work for.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah, I own the business, but I answer to Wonder Pies.
Yeah,
Wonder Pies has got bills to pay. Wonder Pies has got to look after the staff
and
pay the wages. At the end of the day, I'm working like you for Wonder Pies, so I'm working hard to make sure that Wonder Pies has got enough money to make sure that everything's getting paid, everything's legit, and everything's on the table. And you understand that I'm briefing you all the way down where we are, what moment we're at in the business, and what we're going through at the business.
Yeah.
Once you channel all that, then that takes all the emotions out of it for me.
Yeah.
Know what I mean? Because I just say, well, would Wonder Pies put up with it? No, they won't. And this is where we're going in the future. And, you know, all these people that, you know, that we're talking about, that we've brought all these people who we thought were going to be the saviours and turn out to be the biggest duds when you've got people on the floor that could do a better job. And to be honest, if you bring these people in and you're telling these people, mate, this guy will turn it around, and you're just looking and you go, it's not what you told us.
Yeah, and then you look like a dickhead.
And then you look stupid, you know, and then every time someone new, you bring someone else in again because you try again, you know, to help these people, and at the end they just burn themselves because they're thinking your friendship will get them through, but it doesn't really, because you know I'm bringing you on to make changes, mate. I've briefed you, I've told you, I've told you no lies, I've told you everything it is. Sometimes I put my cards on the table that you should never put the cards on the table, but I'm giving you pure and nothing, unfiltered brief on what this business is. And that is it from the heart. There's no hiding secrets or nothing. This is what it is. Because I want you to be ready as soon as you walk in there to change what I need you to do.
Yeah.
And once you've done that and gave them and checked every point and dotted every T or whatever else, stroked every T and dotted every sentence, then you can't blame yourself.
Yeah.
It still affects you.
Yeah, it does affect
you. It's still, for a day, it's still in your mind going, oh, maybe I could have done that. but you need to move on. You
know, yeah, it's just, yeah. It's just a There's part. A lot of that. You've got to yeah. move on.
You just got to move
yeah.
on.
Yeah, I found a great technique. I like, for me personally, I much prefer to take full responsibility for everything.
Yeah.
For absolutely everything, because I find it easier, rightly or wrongly, to forgive myself
yeah.
than forgive someone. Like it winds me up if that person does it. I prefer. Like, someone makes a mistake. I think, why did that person make a mistake? Like, what have we put all the procedures in place to prevent that mistake from happening? And if we haven't, yeah. we obviously haven't, because he's made the mistake. So yeah. that's my fault. And I find that a bit more liberating and a bit easier to deal with
yeah.
than thinking that everyone else is. I'm not saying that you do by any stretch, but I find it easier to take that responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
It just takes it. It just makes it easier. That is.
I think it's age as well. You'll get to that point where it's certain age where you just go, you know what, just another day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I was talking to Andrew from Andrew's Choice today about just on the way in, and we're just talking about that. And I mentioned you, and I said, like, we chat quite a bit. I come mm-hmm. down, see you at the factory, do different things on the phone. You've been through these ups and downs and yeah. different things where, yeah. like I was saying a second ago, a lot of them are the first for us, right? We're coming out of COVID now. It's been fucking crazy. Last year was crazy. Now there's it's getting thrown around. Interest rates are going up. There's less money kicking around. People are tightening the belts. There's mm-hmm. a few things. And you look back on figures from last year and, you know, and this is the first time we've had this thing, right?
Yeah,
do
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you've got a big debt. You've got the factory. You've mm-hmm. got equipment. So it's like, for me, it's a bit more. I remember you always saying, on them quiet times, try and enjoy it. Try and enjoy having
yeah.
that time.
Yeah.
Try and have a bit more time with your family.
To reset.
Because it will come back yeah. and yeah. reset, exactly. So I try and reflect on them little conversations that we've had. But when it's the first and you haven't had multiple times to do it, it's always a bit nerve-wracking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, look, you're as I say, you've got all these business gurus that will tell you, you know, this is what you should do. Just get planned, do this. You know, I think, you know, the number one thing is, if you've got a great product, you got the heart, you can fight, and you know where you're going. You just need to, you know, and you think we're all going down this that word that we don't want to say, but you just got to get in a little bit harder. But the number one thing you cannot take away is the people around you, the yeah. most important people around me. You know, the most important thing for me in the morning is to start a coffee with Jody Crocker,
yeah,
my partner yeah. in business, partner in life. You know, yeah. that is me. And whatever hits me when I walk through that door at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever it is, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's an age thing that has yeah, come yeah, from yeah. me as well, you know?
Of course.
Because you got to remember, you know, it's, you know, you're 15 one time.
Yeah,
next
yeah.
minute you're sitting here, you're running a factory.
Yeah, yeah.
How quick does that go?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's
and you hear all these people, oh, you got it every day. And it is true. You got it. If you enjoy your life, and you just go on and just smack these walls down and just keep going and keep going. Be happy, enjoy little Monty, enjoy Rebecca. That you cannot pay for that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what motivates you through to all the ups and downs, because every business will go through the ups and downs.
Yeah,
we had it all at the beginning. I think we had everything at the beginning.
Did you?
And that's why everything seems easy now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we had everything you could name in the first 2 years, we had. You know what I mean? I was ready to put a noose on my neck and you know, because we had all that.
Yeah,
it was hard.
And also, look about you moving the factory.
Moving the factory.
That must have been massive. We moved from a little shop to here, and that was a relatively easy one. We were very lucky, but we weren't moving. I couldn't imagine moving this to somewhere else. Fuck.
I couldn't. You know, and it's just, and we've sort of outgrown that factory now. You know,
the new one.
Yeah, it's the amount of business, because it's not just pies anymore. It's
yeah, yeah.
It's sandwiches. It's food service. It's
yeah.
There's just lots of stuff going on now that's creating this bigger vibe. You know what I mean?
And do you wish you'd have got a bigger factory?
I reckon we should have, you know, we could have got a bigger one, but it's just always that next step or that's what's going to happen.
You can only go as big as the finances
yeah.
that let you, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. The problem. That's, exactly.
When you don't have a big backer
yeah.
and you know, some company in Singapore where you say, oh, I need to borrow 3.7 million to build.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's all easy. Coming out of your money.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much different when it's your fucking
yeah,
money.
Exactly.
It's yours. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like, when
you know
that pot dries up,
yeah.
this thing is thinking, this is game over,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, oh, should I take that risk? Shouldn't I take that risk?
And, like, and then everybody sees you doing well, or everybody perceives you doing well.
Yeah.
And then comes in and says, oh, can we buy in? You know, and you go, well, this is how much. But oh, no, it's too, you know, mate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we think it's going to be like $200.
Yeah, it's pain money you're paying. You know what I mean? It's not just buying into a business now. It's pain money. You got to feel the pain as well. You know what I mean?
Pain money.
You know what I mean? And that's what it is. It's pain money for me. You know, if you knew what I went through in the 2 years,
yeah,
then that's what you got to pay for, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not you're not
yeah.
paying for the business. You're paying for the pain money that I could have took my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Or had a divorce or broke up from Jody or whatever. Or
you had some rocky times for sure.
Yeah, we had rocky times, you know. Yeah, and there's no hiding from it. I'm not going to hide from it. Yeah, I'm not going to tell everybody it was rosy.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care what people think.
No.
Again, number one thing is the people around me. I've got five people around me. Mm. That's it.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't need 10,000 friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know
same,
I mean?
Same. I've got a small circle.
I just don't need it, man. I don't need their bullshit. I don't need their interference. I don't need that negative or positive. Whatever they're trying to do, I just do not need it. And I do not need hundreds of people telling me how I should run my business.
Because I'm not
interested anymore. Yeah. And I don't care what they think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because what they think and what they see, they'll never know who I am. And that's it. And it's not being... I don't know, it's not being cheeky or nasty or...
No, it's just the reality.
Do not effing care.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know what I mean? That comes with age as well.
Yeah, it does come with age. It does come with age. You know, more, if we go try to be more, I've got 30 good years of my life to lead, and I'll lead them very good.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what. I'm not going to worry about nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is what you're saying there about Jody and the business. Fuck it. That's another conversation, like... being in business with your partner. Fuck it. I remember Peter Boucher saying back in the day, he said, I hope your relationship is strong. That's what he said when we started doing it.
Oh,
because he's in business, his wife as well. Yeah, she ran the delis and all the rest of it, and they've been doing business for years and years and years. I think they even had 30 years or 40 years very recently.
Wow.
And but that's what he said to us. He said to both of us, you know, I hope it's strong because you're going to need it. And fuck, that's true.
Yeah. Oh, it's very true. You know what I mean? It can get very, very, how do you say it? It can get volatile.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It can get very volatile. And you got to let it go.
You've got to let it go, exactly.
You just do not want to go home.
Yeah.
And bring that home with you, you know what I mean? Yeah. And to be honest with you, it's not fair on the two of you.
Yeah, for sure.
Because all you're trying to do, you're trying to do your best.
Yeah.
And your best is you're only trying to think the best and that and bring that together. So it's not really fair that it gets to that point.
Yeah.
But you know you still got it. You always have it. But it's just trying to make sure that you don't draw it out that long.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
now, when we used to follow it, used to be 4 days. We'd talk to each other and bash around, and all you're doing is hurting the business. And doing that, so you make sure you sort of apologise quick, get it done with whoever's wrong, and move on, and then just let it simmer in the head, and maybe go back to it in a better approach.
Yeah.
Than the approach that you think you're going to be abuses or volatile with.
I can't remember if it was you or maybe Matt. Well, someone was saying they try and get out once a month and have lunch, like take a lunch. We've said many times, oh yeah, let's start taking a Thursday off, one a month, and just go somewhere and just spend like.
That's what we do, but we
haven't been able to master that yet. I think we've done it once and it was fantastic because obviously Monty's at school.
Yeah,
if we can get the business all sorted on one Thursday a month, you can just get plus into the city. We went to Philip Michelle's the one time we did it, and it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we can implement more of that moving forward,
it needs to be more of that, you know what I mean? Because for me in business, it's not all about making money. It's again enjoying your life, you know.
Yeah.
You got to make sure that, you know what, Rebecca, let's go and do lunch. And that's what business gives you. It's not always about it's not always money.
Yeah, your time.
It's always
right?
about these times that you can make that decision. Yeah. You know, my time is where I work hard for 3 months, and at the end of that 3 months, I'll go on a break.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for a weekend or a week or whatever it is, but I'll work hard, and then I don't need to. Keep in my mind, oh, you should be at the business or you should be at that. No, I worked hard for 3 months to get here and I'm going to have this break, and that's my goal.
You know
what I mean? If I'm not making all the money that everybody gets nowadays, you know, the amount of wages that people get paid nowadays, I've got to bank that up somehow, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's time for me, is my free time. You know, that's time is very important
for sure.
It's worth it more than money.
Definitely. And I think at the beginning in business, I'm probably less like it. Beck's definitely more like it. I've overcome that a while ago. I've been in more senior positions probably for longer, so I got over it. But definitely, and for people who are opening businesses and whatnot, there will be an element of guilt when you want to leave. Do you know what I mean? If you leave early or whatever and they're still working, you feel like you want to be part of the team or like whatever. But what they don't realize, what the staff are, you know, you've got to realize is when you're at home at 7 o'clock at night on the computer doing research and doing booklet, whatever it might be, they're at home. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, the point being is you shouldn't feel guilty for taking a bit of time
off. You know, it's the worst. You know, all these
people
things.
People do, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah, but all these things that we still do sometimes. Yeah, you know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, my first thing in the morning, I go around, I shake everybody's hand. First thing I do when I leave, I'll shake everybody's hand. But sometimes I think, you know, you know, that's maybe 2 days in a row. I've gone early. I feel embarrassed. I don't want to do it. But you know what? I really do not care now because of the amount of time I put into this business, the amount of time I'm there, the amount of time when I come in, I really don't care because they're getting well paid.
Yeah.
And that's a number one thing. They're getting well paid. They're getting everything paid for. Yeah. They're getting over and above sometimes.
All that stuff. Which sounds crazy, you know, but some people don't.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? So I'm looking after it. And that's your job. That's what you do. And then when we were in the kitchen, it says leaders in first and the leaders out last.
Yeah.
That's bullshit to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the leader has got a lot more stress and problems and things to overcome than the normal person. I mean, if me and you, you know, just doing sauce all day, what a life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Boxed off, that's
exactly.
it. But when you become the leader, you know, you used to sit there when you worked in the big hotels and you used to see all these chefs in the chefs on the chef's table and you're taking them in their dinner and you go, I want to be like this, you know?
Yeah.
But when you became that head chef, you go, shit, this is a hard job.
Fuck, you know
what I mean?
A lot of trust.
Yeah.
You're giving a lot of trust out,
yeah,
right?
Trust, reports, making sure that everybody's good, hearing everybody. And that's one thing I even learned in that is never ask anybody, how are you? Because they're going to tell you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're going to tell you big time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I've
not
got 5 minutes, 10 minutes to understand that. Yeah, if you book a time for me, I'll have time for that. But I'll go, good morning, but never ask you, how are you?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, because you can be there for the next half hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Learning everything that's going on. Mm. And we're all for that, but at the right time.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a thing that I always learned as soon as I became a manager. Never ask anybody, how are you? And people will criticise that comment. But you know, guys, I don't care again. I really don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the management I've learned.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
things I've learned.
And it's things that you do and other people
don't.
Yeah,
things I do, yeah.
Who are you to judge? You do your
exactly.
thing. And, yeah, exactly.
exactly.
Like some people could come here and think the way we do it is a bit whatever and see we've got you, but you've got to walk your path.
Yeah.
I always think that as well. Like, you've got to walk your path. And I always say to people ask me for advice. I fucking don't know why, but people do ask me for advice. And I always say to them, I'll give you as much advice as you want. I'll talk to you all day about your business if I've got time.
Yeah,
friends and whatnot.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But always remember, you take this away, and if you bin it all, that's 100%. I'm more than happy with that. If you use it, that's great. But it has to be your choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I said it, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You've got to make the choice. You've got to analyse it. See if that fits in with what you do. Because I don't want the blame.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, if I give you advice and it doesn't work, don't come in. Like, you know, it's like that thing like, 10 to 1, you know, Red Room, 2 o'clock at whatever.
Yeah.
If you put it on, don't come and tell me that it didn't win. Do you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like,
but that's
it's
the thing,
your
you know?
Choice.
Everybody thinks it's, oh, you're doing it, I can do it, must do it, must. Every business is different.
Exactly.
Every business has got their own little seed, their own little plant, and that plant will grow that way or that goes that way.
Yeah.
But how you feed it, you're going to feel that business. You've got to live and breathe and feel that business.
True.
And if you don't do that, and if you just think you're, if you just, look, if you're going into business to make money, that's not the right attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going into the business to build a business, a life for yourself and the family, that's the attitude
to go
into. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Because sometimes, some years you'll make good money, other years you'll just maybe break even, but you'll still get paid, but you're still walking along. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you're lucky that you've got to make money from non-stop, and never watch what everybody else is doing. All right? Because there's always a different story what they're doing to what you're doing. Oh, look at them, big queues. Oh, well, they must be making a fortune. No, no, just look at how much labour. You know, I take it, right? One shop, pizza shop, one business, right? Takes 18,000 a day, right? One of your shops takes maybe 6,000, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Or a restaurant.
Yeah.
A restaurant takes 18,000. You go, oh, wow, look at that. They're making 18,000 a day. And you go, yeah. What business would you rather have? I've got two people in a shop and I've got 20 people in a restaurant. Yeah, yeah. What business would you really have?
Yeah, yeah. You think you'd want the 18, right? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
What business has got to end up with the profit at the end of the day?
Definitely.
That's in your pocket. Yeah. And these are the things you've got to understand. You've got to understand that bigger is not always better.
There's that famous thing. It's like, revenue is vanity, profit sanity.
Yeah, and that's when everybody says, "Oh, how much are you doing?" No. How much are you making at the end of the end of the table?
Did you see Jamie Oliver? Jamie Oliver said about this when he had his 120 restaurants or 112 restaurants that went under.
Yeah.
He said I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, "I've got 120 restaurants and I've got a pan company."
Yeah.
Selling pans.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have 6 pans in this range.
Yeah.
So I've got this pan company, I've got 120 restaurants. Which one makes the most money? We think 120 restaurants, fucking hell. Da, da, da.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that small pan company, manufacturer, distributor, it makes like 5 times.
And less hassle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I
mean? You know, selling it to David Jones, selling it to the Jamie Oliver pans. This one, thousands of staff so it's like exactly what you're saying. I'm agreeing.
Yeah.
It's not always what it always seems.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's what people need to understand. It's not just because they're rolling every day and got big crowds at the door and what all that stuff doesn't mean to say they're making money.
You know
what I mean? It's what labour costs and all the other costs that's on top of that. Rather, you know, people just think, oh, look, they're taking $8,000. They're taking $8 for a pie. Wow, they're a rip-off, you know?
Yeah.
That $8, what are you making? $8, I'm probably making $2 if I'm lucky with a pie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the important thing that people do not understand. And when you do all these big shows as well, you know, you put your pie up to $10 and they're going, oh, look at that, what a rip-off. I can get that in their shop for $8.
The big thing is draining you as well, right?
Yeah, they're draining us. They're taking 28% off us. Then they're taking site fees. Then they're taking that fee. Then you go...
Staff, the whole thing.
Staff, double time on a Saturday, triple time on it. You know, one staff member making coffee is $800 a day. If he's doing his eight hours on a Sunday, $800 for someone who's making coffee for a day.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just crazy. Yeah. And then someone says to you, oh, you've got to put 7 cents on my credit card. People just are delusional.
You know
what I mean? And then they'll go and buy a Gucci bag for 20,000 or want to walk with a Gucci bag.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the world, you know? They won't spend. And all these people that are getting all these things put into their lips and their faces, they do not understand. If you buy really good food and you buy really stuff that's not...
High-processed.
Heavily high-processed or whatever it is, then you have good skin, you have all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you keep injecting yourself with something that's not even man-made stuff, that's not even been tested or whatever it is, your face has got to go warped.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
what
I mean? And the amount of money that people do not understand.
The beauty industry, for sure.
Yeah, people don't understand that food is one of the main ingredients to make your healthy life.
Oh, you know what I mean? We talk about this quite a lot as well. It's like, it's just incredible, and we all do it. We all have them cheap things and whatever. But if you look at what you're putting into your body, like your body,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like this is the fuel that's going to drive you to be able to do your jobs, and it's crazy. And we're all guilty for it. I got to get.
Yeah, we're all guilty because at the end of the day, you know, life is. Life is to be enjoyed.
Yeah.
If you walk around going blah blah, and if you think these big lips makes you look good, well, look, walk around whatever you want to look. But it's long as you just, number one in life, you got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you read everything on Instagram and everything on Facebook and take it at face value, well, you're a clown. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it never tells a great story.
Definitely. You know, I always look at my nana with health and that. My nana's like 89 or whatever. Maybe, yeah, she's knocking on. She's probably knocking on. But she's eating good food and, you know, bacon sandwiches and pork chops.
My nana just ate a plate of chips with HP sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what she tried to feed you with all this, you know, men's. Oh, what do you want to eat? Nana, I don't want nothing. Nana, you need to eat something. She's just walking about. What are you eating? Oh, I'm just having my chips, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
86-year-old.
Yeah, still kicking.
You know what I mean?
And now it's like every diet, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, and you've got to do the other. Yeah. It's like, hang on a minute. There's living proof here that she's just been eating. Like, I remember rubbing the bread in the dripping.
Yeah,
and,
all
all the meat juices come down and caramelise, rubbing the bread in there, and just like, you know, proper.
It's
like,
all there, you know? And
black pudding.
Yeah.
And
it's not structured. You know what I mean? So your life shouldn't, you know, your life should just be enjoyed.
Yeah.
Not, it's not, you know, structuring yourself. Nobody's got that golden ticket to tell them they've got to live to 200 or got that golden ticket that you've got to be beautiful when you get 50-year-old. And you know, as my mum says to me last night, she goes, oh, you know, you've got friends. I said, yeah, mum, I've only got 5 friends. She goes, oh, well, when you get to a certain age, you've got no friends because they've all gone, you know. Yeah. I goes, well, that's fine, you know. I says, I'm happy if I've not got any friends either. I says, no, I'll just do whatever I have to do, mum. You know what I mean?
Does she still give you that kind of advice, your mum?
Yeah. Nice. She says, oh, make sure you make time to go out and see them. I goes, yeah, when I want to, mum. Yeah. You know what I mean? And they're the same. They know where they can knock on the door when they want to see me as well. You know what I mean? I says, but if I'm feeling tired, I don't want to go. Yeah, maybe I should make an extra push and you go out and you have a great night. I says, but, you know, sometimes I just got to have time to myself in the thing.
Are you a bit of a loner like that? You like a bit of time to myself?
I like a bit of time to myself. I'm happy to be around myself, you know what I mean? And just dodge away. I could become a recluse, you know?
Yeah.
Very easily become a recluse.
Could
you? Know
you?
What I mean? Oh, yeah, I could. Yeah, I could.
It's funny, I was speaking to like a therapist or whatever, I've done it for a few times, and that come out of that, like one of the things is that realising that I do like time on my own, it's a big part of my life. I was an only child, hung around in the woods a lot on my own, not flashing at anyone or anything, but you know what I mean?
Climbing
trees, digging holes, a lot of time. And if, like, if there's a group of people, I've got my group of people, you know, sometimes they bring a mate, like that unsettles me. I'm not into that. Like, if I don't know everyone, like, really, like, if we say we're going for beers or something, more in England than I do here, because I don't really do it here, but if I go and meet a friend, he goes, I'm just going to bring me mate.
Yeah.
I'm always like, oh, I don't know about that. Do you know what I mean? I don't know this guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm very, like, I like it nice time.
I don't drink or I don't smoke. It's not to say that I'm against it or whatever. It's just, I've never done it because I've seen the problem that it can cause where I come from, you know, because it's like Baghdad on a Saturday night, you know, where I come from, and it's a mental place. So I had to keep my wits about me when I was young, you know.
Yeah.
And
that's why you didn't drink.
Yeah, that's why I didn't drink, because
you wanted to always be switched on.
I had to be switched on, you know. I mean, I've got about 10 chapters written in a book because you couldn't. Make this shit up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And what went on, because I was a mod at that time as well. I grew into be a mod and I grew.
What is a mod?
A mod was a guy who listened to a lot of soul music, R&B, went about on a Lambretta scooter in a gang, you know what I mean? And always fought with the rockers, you know, who were into heavy metal and all that sort of stuff. And
I remember these days.
Yeah.
80s, early 80s, late 70s, right?
I used to organise all the scooter rallies, you know.
Did
you? I used to.
You used to go to Scarborough?
Yeah, Scarborough, Bournemouth. My scooter club's still going. East Lothian Scooter Club is still going. We started that off and it was one of the probably one of the hardest scooter clubs around, you know.
Toughest.
But it's still going, It's still going. It's still going now. And it's the same guy that are in there that went around. And I think that's one of my bucket lists that I want to go and do, go back and do another scooter run before.
And what's a scooter run? Like, you'll all meet up at somewhere?
Well, you'll start from where I come from, Preston Pans, just outside Edinburgh. Then you'll drive down to, like, Blackpool, Bournemouth, Isle of Man, wherever that scooter run is. And there's usually a calendar on bank holidays.
Yeah,
and then there's about 30 to 40 scooters go there, and then you turn up and there's about 10,000 scooters. So you all camp and you just dance, there's dances on.
Also, different scooter
groups. Oh, scooter clubs, yeah.
Right, and then you'll all meet up in
all
one
get together,
area.
All get together,
I remember back in the day, because I'm from Redcastle, there was like a... Scarborough's, it's not close, yeah, it's down the way, but you've got Whitby, Scarborough. So you've got Scarborough, Whitby, Saltburn, Mask.
That is the heart of the scooter.
All that, and they used to come through, and it'd be like, dung, dung, hundreds.
Yeah,
zing,
hundreds
zing,
of them. Yeah.
Zing, zing, like crazy. So many. You're like, what
that feeling, just the feeling, you know, and you used to dress up beautifully.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, big coat.
Yeah, big
coat,
you
know,
you had the big parkas just to protect your suit and all that, you know what I mean? And then you would roll in. And
is that what the parker was to protect your suit?
Yeah, to protect the suit while you were on the bike, you know. And, you know, when I look back, if my life finished there, my life was amazing then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just, I was in the scene, it was just incredible, you know, this mod scene, you know.
How many years was that, do you reckon?
Oh, that was probably about 10 years, it just...
Was it?
Yeah, and it was all about, you know, there's some point I had to get out of it, you know, because it was pretty...
Got a bit full on.
It was a bit of full on, you know what I mean? There's a lot of stories that you could just, you just go, wow.
Would you just rock up to like... you know, wherever, towns, cities or whatever, and just all pile into one club or something.
Yeah, all pile into one club. You go into the garages, you fill up your scooter and you leave and the guy's chasing you after you.
Oh, no, don't pay for it.
Everybody, you know, 50 scooters going out, you know what I mean? And you know, something. It was just mental. But, you know, there's no drugs, a lot of drugs. Was in that thing, but again, I've never took a drug, I've never drunk, and I've never smoked.
Yeah,
you know
never had a cigarette in your life.
I've always been into keep fit. Soccer. I used to play a lot of soccer.
Yeah.
And done that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So how did you get into cooking? What happened there?
I got into cooking. I was always wanted to play soccer, and I was.
So you wouldn't be a professional footballer.
Yeah, I was assigned as S form for a club in Scotland. I had a nasty knee injury that kept rubbing, you know, and they basically says, oh, you need to get operated. In their days, in this day now, you could be key surgery. In their days, it was like 6 months or it would never come back, and then you never got insured.
Yeah.
So it was, what do I do next? And because, you know, wasn't listened to mass or anything.
Yeah.
Some guy says to me, my mum says, oh, you need to go and learn maybe how to cook, or it was either
a trade.
So the trade was, you can be a painter or you can be a cook.
Yeah.
And I thought, all right, I'll be a cook. So we went into this sort of like country inn and started cooking one day. And this, you know, I'm just thinking, shit, all these guys, they've all got scissors in their pockets, there's big pots of water on. I goes, when we got to start cooking? He goes, soon, mate, soon, soon. And then just chop the parsley. So chopping the parsley. He goes, oh, the bus is here in 10 minutes. I goes, but when are we starting to cook? And he goes, nah, mate. It all comes out the a box, you know. It was all boiling a bag at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Even at that time, boiling a bag, you know.
Yeah. It's been going for years.
Duck a la orange, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was my first thing of cooking. I says, oh, I can do better. So all of a sudden, for some reason, all these chefs left. And I was one left with this other chef. And I thought,
oh,
this
kid. Oh, finished work, quit.
Just gone,
Yeah.
And I thought, I can, I'm good. And he goes, now you're in charge. He goes, man, I don't know how to cook, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I used to learn off of books and all that sort of stuff. And I goes, this kitchen's disgusting. I'm going to clean it. I'm going to make sure it's spotless.
Yeah.
And then we started making duck a la orange yourself. And then we started making scones. And that's how I got into cooking.
Was it?
And then moved on to the big hotels, you know.
Did you work at Glen Eagles,
Caledonian?
How was that? How was Glen Eagles?
It was fantastic. You know what I mean? We took over. And again, that was the thing where when we went there, they were dunking young apprentices into the pots and all that. Try to, you know, that was their torture, or they were mean to that. So we had to rechange the whole atmosphere of, it was tough, but we lost over. We went in the first night and this chef that we had worked with in the Caledonian with British Transport Hotels, where the SAS used to come round and ask if you wanted to join the SAS because it was the toughest training.
In Scotland?
Yeah, in Scotland.
A lot of the SAS are Scottish.
Yeah, in British Transport Hotels. They used to go around asking, do you want to join the army for the SAS? You know what I mean? And they were tough. And this, we worked with this great guy called Alan Hill, who's a fantastic chef, and basically pushed me forward to go to places. Says, you need to go to London now. Got my mum up and says, look, he needs to go to London or he's got to lose his way. You need to get a grip of him quick. You know what I mean? Because he's, you know. And then I went down to London, but started saying, oh, and he went to La Manga and then says, oh, I've got a job. He was working in the Savoy Grill at the time. And he says, look, don't come to the Savoy Grill. I've got a job in Glen Eagles. We've got to get all the old team together.
Oh, so you were in Scotland, went to London, went back to Scotland.
Yeah, got it. And we've got to get the old team together. We've got to take over Glen Eagles because, you know, and what a... So the first weekend, and he was a stickler, you know, and changed his tune now, you know. And basically, that first weekend, there was like 4,000 oil men coming, and they booked the whole place out for...
Oil rigs?
For the golf course and all that, you know what I mean? They've all got money. They all play for this big cup. But they take over everything, and the chef says, all right, we're going to do steaks. And it was like a 200 gram sirloin, 400 gram sirloin, 600 gram sirloin, blah, 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 blah. And I say, chef, no disrespect, but that's a lot of fucking steaks. To, you know, if they all come at once, we're going to, Raymond, see, you've lost your bottle since you've not been with me. Let's just do it. I goes, all right, chef, no problem. That first night, we started at 8 o'clock. And we finished at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was fucking disaster.
Yeah.
Absolutely disaster. And we had at least that weekend, we had about 80 chefs go AWOL.
Yeah, fine.
Overnight.
Gone.
Yeah, just gone. Boom. Because they know, they go, oh, these guys have just came in. They're fucking, oh, they don't know what they're doing. Mm. You know, they're...
80's a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot. Right.
And
you know, it's like when you lose two.
Yeah. And we come in the morning, we just look at each other and go... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we turned it around in the end, but it was just...
And how long were you there for?
I was there for 6 years.
Were you?
6 years, yeah. I probably took on a position probably too early.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've done the same.
Yeah, probably too early in my life.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I was treated like... You get treated like royalty. You had,
yeah.
You know, you drove around in Range Rovers, you had a coat, a summer coat to go around all the outlets, because this was a massive place, you know? And then you had the winter coats all around in Range Rover, so you thought you were King Dick. You had your breakfast in the chef's office. You had the chef's table. The waiters used to come in and serve you. You had your lunch, you had your dinner, you had your after service. And you thought you were, you know, it was probably the wrong thing to do at my age.
How old were you at that age, Jürgen?
I was probably about 22.
Yeah, fuck.
23, 22.
You need to be just grinding.
Yeah, I need to be grinding. Yeah, I should have been grinding, you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why I sort of got back to...
I did a similar, not at that level, because Glen Eagles is different, but I definitely took a couple of positions that it was a bit over my head for sure. It's not a nice feeling, to be honest.
It's not a nice feeling, and I thought, you know, I soon learned how I should how I should work and how I should be, because all the sous chefs and all that stayed in one house in Auchterarder, we all stayed in this big mansion, you know, so it was like... heaven, you know what I mean?
It was a
team family, you know?
The beautiful, them kind of manor houses and lodges and all that in Scotland, and they're just beautiful, man.
Oh,
the land,
you know?
And that.
It was a life. It was a sensational life.
The deer and all that, the red stars.
Yeah, everything.
All
you
the eagles. It's just beautiful.
They say that, you know, Glen Eagles is the garden of the gods, you know.
Is that
what I mean?
They say,
we had Sylvester Stallone flying when he was doing the... what was it called? Cliffhanger movie.
Oh, was that filmed in Scotland?
No, it was filmed in Italy.
Oh,
but
he
used to fly over every weekend, and that's where he would base his cell and then go back the next again week. So, you know, we had Sylvester Stallone come in, we had Stuart, the driver. We had all these people coming in, you're meeting these stars. You could, you know, you were bringing your mates up to have lunch in the chest.
Yeah,
and it was just, you know.
Some of the produce as well, the Langoustines.
Yeah, oh, we used to get everything from Rudges. So the van used to go on Monday and come back on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Everything from Rudges Market.
Just for you guys?
Just for us guys,
far out.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you used to see this, who was this big, the best meat in the Highlands, come down with big truckloads.
Mm.
And that was all, you know, coming whole. The butchers, five butchers, just butchering everything down. It was amazing.
Looking at that now, as a manufacturer, you think of like them accounts.
Yeah.
Oh man, imagine getting
crazy.
That account for
just
like
crazy.
Whatever,
oh, yeah.
Langoustines or scallops or beef or whatever. That account must be just worth millions and millions.
It was worth millions, you know what I mean? Because all that stuff coming in and all the meat's coming in.
Potatoes, right? Mushroom, whatever, right?
And the prices were, you know, we were buying from Campbell's at that time, and Campbell's was a very good butcher's, you know?
Yeah.
And their stuff was extortionate. They used to feed the rich, you know what I mean?
And their
prices was just mental, you know what I mean? And basically, that account alone would have just, you know, you could work for, they had a beautiful display shop where you could look in at the door never closed. It was just, it was a door that you could let the air through, and it was like that old style butcher. It was beautiful, stunning shop, you know.
Yeah.
And we used to buy stuff from them as well, and it was just sensational.
Yeah, yeah.
All the great, and runges, you know, you're getting all your, from France, you know, this. Yeah. Everything was displayed beautiful in the box. That was it, the little cabbages, the little cauliflowers, the little plums are all the same size. It was all, and, but everything was delicious, you know what I mean?
We had a guy come work for us. We went to Jesmond Dean House, one of Terry's hotels, and a French guy, Pierre, he was called, and he had a lot of great, he used to be the sous chef at, the Glass House, two-star.
All right, yeah.
It was, I think it used to be Gary Rhodes's before.
Yeah, that's right.
Back in the day. And he, when he started coming to work with us, he used to get foie gras flew in from France. I can't remember, it might be in Lyon or wherever. So it sort of put into a polystyrene box, it would arrive and it would still be like almost room temperature, and you could slice it and eat it raw.
Like
you start seeing them products, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you normally, you know, you get tomatoes all piled in, this delivery.
Yeah.
Then you see the new standard, it's like, fuck, this is out there, right? This is out there. Yeah, like,
exactly. And that's why they came. Every tomato was the same. Everybody, tomato was hand-picked, and that's what you were paying for, you know?
I love Scotland. I do, Scotland.
It's a great country to visit. To visit, you know?
Yeah.
I always like, you know, it's good to visit, you know what I mean? It's a hard life if you're brought up in it, you know what I mean?
Day-to-day.
Yeah, the day-to-day grind, you know?
And grafting as well, when you're working, you know, in the rain.
Chipping
the ice and snow off your car.
You know what I mean?
I just
could not do that anymore. You know, I can't even go near snow anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just too hard. Mind you, in Melbourne, I think in July, I reckon that the colds are damp, where every house in Scotland is built for that cold. You know what I mean? Whereas here, houses are not built for it.
Yeah. Double glazing.
Yeah.
Insulation and all the rest of it.
So that's my motivation in business, to be June and July, out of Melbourne.
Ah, yeah.
Up in the warmth.
Nice.
Yeah, I've got to. I've got to, and hopefully, that's next year.
You'll get there. And just to go a bit through your career, you were at Dorchester.
Was it Dorchester in London with Anton Moserman, the big man at the time.
Yeah. How was that?
Yeah, it was good, you know. It was fighting. It was that street. As I say, in life, it teaches you to be a street fighter, you know. So you were a pretty street fighter. When you got to London, it was dog eat dog. You know what I mean? You had to pick your time. I went up to the Terrace, which was I think the Terrace was 2 stars at the time, and I went up to the Terrace, and I used to think, fuck, every day you used to have to start fresh.
Yeah.
And you used to see all these French, and they were just completely in the shit all the time. And that's what learned me, you know, if you come in like a bull in a china shop, upset everybody, it's not a great place to be, you know. And I just used to watch these guys go absolutely mental, always being the shit, these French chefs. They're always in the shit. And I went down to Moserman and said, mate, I want to work on the sauce. I says, this guy's useless, you know what I mean? And they put me on the sauce one. First night, he goes, all right, you think you're clever, you go in the sauce. I went down like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
But the next again night, I came back, you know, because I learned...
Rose from the ashes,
you know what I mean?
And I rose up
and I was under control. And I just thought, what was all the problems, you know what I mean?
But
it was just, I just couldn't work in that sort of... But we, you know, you're saying that mental, we had a mental Italian... head chef at that time, you know,
he took
off his Rolex watch one night and goes, you cannot come bring this to me on the pass, you know, and he goes, I tell you, you're stupid, and brings his Rolex watch fucking smashed everywhere, and that was his, you know.
Just losing his mind, mate,
just gone crazy, you know, and you just go, yeah, no problem, or you send the dish up, and you go, oh, it's salty. And you bring it back, send the same dish up. He goes, that's better. You know, these games.
Same thing, same game, same sauce, same everything.
It's too salty. Well, that's what, you know. And why would you make it hard for someone?
Yeah. I remember saying about throwing his Rolex. I remember a guy, literally pulling his hair out in Jersey. He worked at the Ritz, young guy, pulling like chunks of his hair out. Like, what the fuck? He's unhinged. Do you know what I mean? Like, this guy's unhinged.
Exactly.
Just too much. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? When it gets to that point, and you're throwing your Rolex and you're pulling your hat, like, you know, take a break.
Be a bus driver.
Take a break. You know what I mean? It's too dangerous. It's too dangerous. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I could talk to you all day, remember, about this kind of stuff. But you had a great career in restaurants and hotels. But what made you get into manufacturing? Why do you think you... Because I'm in the... Very similar. I was a chef for ages, and I got into manufacturing because of Monty. But what made you get into it?
I could see what was happening. You know, I came out of here in Grace, and I could see what was happening. There's not going to be any chefs soon. Yeah, COVID brought it on, but it was always going to be a problem. We could see people's not coming into this industry. They're not coming in for their love. They're coming in for thinking they're going to be superstars, and they're going to... You know, being a newspaper and all that. I thought, you know what? Then I seen this guy selling pies. I thought, maybe I should, you know, see what I can do in that. And that's what got me into it. But it wasn't my main goal. My main goal was that I'll get into this, and then I'll get into making stuff for restaurant food. You know what I mean? And because I can see it's got to be massive. I mean, we're still 2 years ago, I couldn't sell it. You know what I mean? Now the chefs are coming, oh, can you make this? Can you make that? Can you do this?
It's getting more, right?
It's getting more. And that's good. And to be honest, there is nothing against that. I used to do that when it was in here in Grace. In June, July, we used to do the Christmas menu, make sure everything's patted down. We go around, we get people to make it for us. We would just concentrated on making the sauces, and that's what we did. We made sure all the turkey jus was getting made, because you couldn't get bones come November or December. We used to make everything was done, all the bases were done.
Yeah.
And we made more profit, and the stress level was so under control. We never lose any staff over Christmas or over that November, December, 5-5-5. Everything was bought in. All the steaks were cut to what we wanted. All the lemon tarts or whatever it was, and Christmas puddings were all made off someone else. All the recipe, we just finished the sauce, 300 lunch, 300 dinner. Not everybody was happy. And that's what I learned, and that's what I said, you know what, I'm going to get into this business because I can see there's got to be problems.
Exactly the same.
And that's what got me into this business. And it's proven to be
that it makes sense. The training and everything. There's a lot that goes on. And I always look at it like, back in the day, you used to have to buy a full pig. And like, if you were a restaurant, you broke it all down. Then a butcher come along. The butcher said, oh, if you want to buy the loin, and you want to buy the chops, and you want to buy the leg, they divide it. Now we're getting to a point where it's like, oh, you want to buy that cooked. And you just put some, do you know what I mean? It's just coming down. And like you say, if you can... Like, that's what we with tureens and that, we have people that just put it on, wine bars that put it on, and things like that. It's just so much easier for them than to make it.
If it's a decent product,
they'll have to do it. They probably couldn't make it as good.
Again, if it's consistent and it goes consistent and the people love it, why not? You know what I mean? And then you can concentrate on a couple of dishes that you make, but the rest of this stuff is... And for head chefs nowadays, they're getting all the stress. They're getting all the thing with problems with staff and all this other stuff. It's... To relieve them. Now I can sit here and say that, but I did it in June and July. We tested it to go out to the market to do what we done for the ration. I didn't care. I saluted every dish that went out because I made so much more money. And not lost any staff. I wasn't stressed. I wasn't coming in every day and saying shit, he's not turned up. I had the stuff was all ordered and processed, and that took a lot of stress off of me and made everybody great and made the business happy. You know what I mean?
It makes sense. And it totally makes sense.
And if people keep going on and chefs keep, oh, we make our own, well, that's fine. That's fine, man.
Fair enough.
But there will become a day that you just can't do it because you've not got the staff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So that's what made me get into manufacturing.
Yeah, and you enjoy it?
I love it. You know, every day I come in, I really enjoy it. First 2 years, I didn't enjoy it. It was hell on earth. You know what I mean?
Because you've got to laugh because otherwise
you're coming into a new environment. These people have never had goals, they've never had vision, they've never been taught vision. They're just coming in every day making pies. You've got to make sure that you grow and water these people and make sure there's other areas that they can move in that factory. Definitely. And that's very important, But they've never had that in manufacturing. People's never looked at them and says, you know, you're good, I'm going to put you somewhere else, or you can do this and you can do that. Let's move you to here. Like we used to do in the hotels.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just that bog standard. Now you come in and you... Now, with that, you train them to go here. So everybody in the factory can do everything.
Yeah.
We're not just relying on one person to do it. They're trained up in everything. And people love that. But you give them that vision. And I think it's very important that you give them that end goal to the people that want to do it.
Definitely.
You know
no,
I mean?
For sure. And I think as well, the fact that I feel like, and I could be wrong, and I'm probably like, who are you to say that? But I feel like when people like us, let's just say it, we're lifting the standard of manufacturing.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Like, exactly.
And it's an option for chefs to come out of, and we're trying to put restaurant quality. Have worked in great restaurants, got great standards. I'm not saying that other factories haven't, but we're bringing that fine attention to detail restaurants to manufacturing. I think it's great for the industry.
Yeah.
I think it's an option for people to come and work. Chefs who are no longer wanting to work nights and things, it's an option for them and somewhere for them to grow as well.
Well, I actually enjoy it more than doing fine dining, to be honest with you.
Well.
Because you're going in there and you're making 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. Now, there's not many chefs can do that consistently, you know what I mean? And the thing is, you're learning a lot more, and you're doing a product that basically is going to hit a lot more people, and a product that basically... you can be very proud of, you know what I mean?
And that's it,
and you're right. We are a few little fine tunes, not
not reinventing the wheel.
Not reinventing the wheel,
definitely
but
not.
Just that care and that love in what you're doing there and making that commercially viable.
Definitely.
Is the best challenge.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because people say, oh, you'll never last long or you'll never do this. Yeah, well, I will last long because I know what I'm doing, you know what I mean? I'm
exactly.
not a clown, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that you learn.
And it's that we always try and say we're trying to bring restaurant quality to the wholesale environment, right?
Yeah, and making people eat better stuff, you know?
Yeah,
not fully additives, not fully this, not fully that.
Yeah.
But, you know, keeping in a tight schedule, but still giving them a great product. Yeah, it costs a little bit more, but what would you rather eat? Something that's got so much stuff in it that you don't know what's in it, but we're giving you a better product. And that's what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth paying that little bit more. Again, I can say that because I'm making it, but I'm telling you, it's a lot better to eat.
I agree.
You know what I mean? And everybody say, I can make a pie better than you. Yeah, well, maybe you can, but for a price, I can make, you know.
And 5,000
of
them. Do you
people,
know what I mean?
Yeah, and people say to me, okay, you know, is it a good pie? I go, yeah, good pie for the price. You want me to make you a better one?
No problem, mate.
But you'll pay $10 this time.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
So it's make it again.
For the market, right?
Everything's got
a limit, right? Everything's got a ceiling.
You're
not going to get 27 pounds for a pie. You're just not, right?
You know what I
mean? So you can only...
No.
Because you've got to go to business as well.
We've got two, you know. We've got the Wonder Pies and we've got the Nana Fraser's Pies. And the Nana Fraser's Pies is for someone who wants that. Pie it for $3 or $4, $5, you know what I mean? But the Wonder Pies is 90% meat.
It's
great stuff. We use great stuff, and the Nana Fraser is still great stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the price you want it. So
I can
make whatever pie you want. It all depends on the price.
Yeah, yeah. Mince,
you know what I mean?
Or chunky beef
or whatever,
right?
Exactly.
I had a pie yesterday.
I had the
chicken tandoori. It's my favourite.
It's my favourite one.
In my opinion, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone, I always think someone who's doing a good product is when there's someone else who's done, there's many favourites. Like when we do tastings, people are like, I love the chicken. I love the pistachio. I love the duck. I think that's when, you know, someone might love the chunky beef. So when everyone's got their favourites you're a winner, right? Everyone loves the chunky beef and hardly anyone likes it. It's like when it's a full
range. Well, you learn from people. We've got a panel. It's 10 people on the panel. Everything from a tradie to someone who knows nothing about food. We have 10 panels.
Mm.
We bring it in. We do it every month. We taste all the pies. We get in, you know, even the person who knows nothing about food can come up with something. Really
that
you never...
Because there's a lot of them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
And that's the people who's buying your product.
Yeah.
So that's the people you're aiming for.
If they think
it's good, then you're on a winner.
You know what I mean?
Not the lawyer
who's
just buying it because he wants to eat a Wonder Pies. You know, it's a person that you think is the market I want to go for.
Mm.
You know what I mean? The tradies and all that sort of stuff. That's the people I want to go for.
For sure.
Is to make sure it's a great pie. You know what I mean?
For sure.
For the price.
Definitely, I get it. You know? I could, honestly, Raymond, I had 17 questions. I probably asked you one of them. Honestly, yeah. maybe if I'm being honest, I probably asked you three of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'd have to do this again because it's awesome. It's and I could talk to you all day, but yeah, you know, you've got things to do. I've got things to do. Yeah. And, you know, people probably get sick of our voices.
Yeah.
But let's cut it off there and let's come back to it. I would love to do more and pick more about your brains. I love the honesty. And so much experience, and yeah, thank you very much for your time, honestly.
No problem, thank you. Thanks for asking me.
Thanks, Raymond.
That's all, folks.